This episode is brought to you by Home Team Inspection Service. When you partner with Home Team, you're getting more than a home inspection. You're delivering the home team experience. With a team approach, fast turnarounds, and package options that include home inspection warranties, Home Team helps real estate pros stand out. Plus, many locations now offer pay at close, giving your clients flexibility when they need it most. Schedule your next inspection with confidence at hometeam.com.
I feel there's a difference between fulfillment and significance. Robin Williams was significant. Like, he walked into a room, people loved him. You know, he was that guy. Yeah, he didn't feel something inside. Fulfillment, I feel you can walk in a room and when you feel fulfilled about what you're doing on a day-to-day basis, that's when you know that your journey is going the right direction.
Welcome to the Color of Money podcast. Today, I'm joined by the full crew, Julia, Bo, and Emmerich. And today, I'm excited to welcome not only a friend of mine, but also a powerhouse entrepreneur, Mr. Scott Maloof of Maloof International. Now, Scott comes from a legacy of innovation and business leadership. And through Maloof International, he's been driving growth, building partnerships, and helping create opportunities on a global scale. Now, I'm looking forward to diving into his journey, his vision, and the lessons he's learned along the way. Welcome, Scott.
Thank y'all for having me.
Now, I think one of the things you're known for, that outside of the hat that we were talking about off camera, is just the journey and the way that you've built your company and the way that you've grown and scaled your company to have these massive amounts of sales, this big real estate team, this incredible culture, and this idea of philanthropy and giving back to your community as well. Tell us a little bit about how you got started, you know, the quick version on how you got from there to here.
So, before real estate, I was a club promoter. That's what I did before I was in this business. I did that since I was actually in high school. And, you know, in high school, I was throwing events. I was going inside of other high schools, passing out flyers, acting like I went to school there. When I got out of high school, started throwing 18 and up parties, concerts, things like that. And then over time, you know, those things progressed to where I was doing, you know, 500 to 1,000 people 3 days a week. And it just wasn't fulfilling. And, you know, I was getting the calls the next day about such and such got a DWI or a fight happened and I'm having a party the next day. So I'm having to break it up and just call people and kind of dissolve the situation. And one of my parties, there was a big fight broke down and I knew both sides of the fight and a guy ends up killing the other guy in inside of the party. And I was like, dang, this ain't it no more. So one of my other friends was getting his real estate license. I was like, you know what? I think that's probably the move I need to take too. So I went, you know, started taking my classes, did all that. Took me a while to pass my test. By the time I passed my test, he was already back working at T-Mobile. So I went straight into Keller Williams. I was, you know, that's where I started. That's where I've been homegrown. And first year got very intentional about, you know, just letting go of my past, letting go of my past seasons. And, you know, I'm done with the nightlife, done with certain things. And I went all in for that year, did 85 transactions that year as an individual agent, where I was forced to start a team my second year, where I brought on my assistant, who's now my director of operations, and two buyer agents that second year. And we did 161 transactions that year. And then we've grown year after year since then. The way we built the team, so year three, you know, we go to a lot of these conventions and you hear about expansions and, you know, they're going to this city. And I'm like, okay. So I took the class ESO, and the ESO took it three times and I was like, you know what? I don't think I want to expand. I said, because most time why people lead teams is to start their own team. So my goal is to build a team where I'm a platform where people can build their own team aside of the team when they've earned the right. So that's how we structured it. Once an agent does $4 million on an annual production, that's with 18 transactions, then they've earned the right to start a team aside of the team where we become the platform that they can plug and play and they have certain standards they have to meet with. And they get a 5% rev share of the agents underneath them. Yet it also brings them the value to be able to build what they're looking to build inside of our organization.
That's such a cool concept. I think for a lot of people that have built teams, the thought has been, how do we go wide and not deep? And you've created a different way of keeping your culture and keeping your team together. Now, how do you build that? What does that structure look like inside of your world? How many agents are inside of that platform for the agents that want to go grow teams?
So for us, you have to take career visioning before you can start that team aside of a team. There's a certain production. You have to be in coaching. So we have group coaching on different tiers too. So once an agent joins the team, we put them in productivity coaching from 0 to 3 million. And then we have them on MAPS group coaching from 3 million and above. Once an agent's at 8 million, then we pay for half of their max coach. And then once they're at 12 million, then we fully pay for their max one-on-one coach. So there's certain coaching, certain tools that we use, because there's a lot that I could say. Sometimes it's same message, different messenger.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to be able to talk to those coaches and say, hey, like, you know, this is what we're looking to grow. This is what we're building. And everybody's on the same page, yet I have a different messenger speaking into them, where it's not always just me and it's sounding like broke already.
There's probably a lot of agents that want to be on your team or want to participate in that model. How do you attract talent, or what do you look for in somebody that wants to be on your team that maybe predicts future success, or maybe they possess something you don't want on your team? How do you decipher who's the right talent? Because I'm sure people come to you all the time.
We do. We say no a lot more than we say yes. So we have a 5-step interview process. We have a book that I go over with the first interview that goes over the culture of the team, the structure, what it looks like, the commission, everything broken down. And I'm filling them out in that meeting, you know, just talking to them. I know usually within the first 5 minutes if they're going to be a fit for the organization on my side. If it's a green light on that, then I can tell their personality on who would be the good mentor that is a mentor on the team. And step two is we're going to send them over the DISC profile and the KPA. They're going to take those, and then they're going to meet with my director of operations and that mentor. Green light past that meeting, then the mentor is picking 4 to 6 agents on a team that's going to do a team interview on them. Green light past that, then we go over the life story, then we give them the offer to join the team. So, you know, going through that, we're very selective on who we're picking. Yet once they've gone through that, they appreciate, you know, what they've joined at that moment.
That's good. One thing I think we've all noticed about top agents is they're very clear about what it is they do and how they do it. And you're like, I know exactly what I'm looking for. We have a system that goes like this. We have a model that goes like this. You're very clear about what you do. Yeah. But I know our listeners are probably wondering, like, what does your team look like?
So we're at 27 agents, and then we have 4 virtual assistants for our transaction team. We have our director of operations. We have 2 ISAs. I do have ownership and a title. We have a full-time videographer and a full-time photographer. And that's kind of how it's broken down right now. That's what the structure looks like. And then lead agents, we have 6 of those that have agents underneath them currently. And then we have about 2 people that are about to pop up to the leadership opportunity.
And then, of course, in Keller Williams, we like to talk about GCI and units and volume and all of that. How much does all of those 27 agents actually net you?
So I'm around 23% pop. That's about my net profit. My GCI is usually around 3.5 to 4 million, and we do around 150 to 160 million, and then it's usually about, it's between 400 to 600 units a year.
That's wild, Scott. That is absolutely incredible.
It's crazy.
That is a massive team. Yeah.
It's interesting. You know, Julia, you asked Scott about just being clear and what you're focused on and what you're looking for. I think something you've done really well is also be known for something. And so I'd be interested in, you know, we're all wearing our little hats because we were joking around on Scott being known as the hat guy. So maybe you could tell us the hat story and how Julia said no hats.
Don't mess with
Julia's hair.
Yeah. But like, I didn't really want to mess up my hair either.
So, you know, Scott, I'd love to hear the hat story and how the hat came. But then also, as you think about positioning your team for that massive type of volume, what's different about your team? How do you guys differentiate yourself from the market? And how do you communicate that back out to the world?
Okay, so the hat was actually a gift from some agents on my team 1 year for my birthday. And I just started wearing the hat. People started complimenting me on the hat. And I was like, you know what? They were like, oh, that's the guy with the hat. Over time, I started wearing hats more to where it became a brand. And then I was like, you know what? Now I can't even step out without a hat. And people think I'm bald, but I'm not even bald. I just... So kind of how we got into there. So I really feel it's our culture. You know, our culture thrives, and that's what attracts a lot of people. When I look at teams and I look at what we're building and how we're building it, and I look at different businesses around the country and what we were looking to mimic, our goal is to mimic a mega church, and how mega churches thrive are through small groups. So inside of our team, we have different small group chairs and co-chairs when it comes to philanthropy, faith, social, wellness, tech, education, so events. So there's different chairs that we do, and we do different things every quarter. So like our team, every month they have a woman's Bible study. Every month we have a teen Bible study. We go to, it's called CBC, it's a church, it's a non-denominational church. We go to church together every Sunday. So there's certain things we do on the faith side to be able to grow to the people, push them on that. but he's in a different season, a different space and time. We don't push it like, hey, you have to go to this. Yet I know when they embrace it, they feel it, and they see that, you know, we don't look down on the buddy unless we're helping them up. And our goal is to help them up as many ways as possible. And then for philanthropy, we do, I know we talked about it a little earlier with before we jumped on the podcast, but we do a single mother's brunch the day before Mother's Day. We do a backpack event the end of July where we give away 1,000 backpacks of school supplies. I know Daniel just knocked out one too. And then we do a turkey drive in the end of November. So I was raised by a single mom. That's how I was raised growing up. I never knew my father. And, you know, growing up, I remember, you know, going to school in certain ways that, you know, we were the house right outside the trailer park. And I just remembered, you know, the neighborhood helped each other. Like, you know, I remember the moms and everybody in every different house. Like, that's how everybody got, you know, that's how we were raised. I mean, the neighborhood helped each other out. And after my rookie year, I was like, I'm taking my family on a team trip. So I'm Lebanese. And there was a Lebanese convention going on in New Orleans. And I said, okay, you know, I'm a pop out. We're going to go out there. I was taking my mom and my grandparents. And my grandma and mom went first. My grandma calls me and she says, hey, Scott. Well, my mom calls me. She says, hey, Scott, can you go pick up my bathing suit? I said, okay, I'm going to go pick it up. And then my grandma calls me about 45 minutes later and said, hey, mama's not breathing. And she died from a blood clot at the age of 51. And when I look at legacy, the word legacy, a legacy is not what you leave for people. It's what you leave in people. And she was always a giver. She was a giver, but it wasn't in money. It was in time. It was in, you know, she was there for people. Like when somebody was in the hospital, she'd be there cooking and bringing a plate of enchiladas or something. Or during Christmas, she would make her banana nut bread. And that's what she would gift out to 100 different people. So she was always a giver. And for me, it's like, okay, I know I'm entrusted with everything that we have. The money that I got, I'm entrusted with. The people that are in our organizations, I'm entrusted with. And it's a responsibility on how you deal with it and what you do with it to be able to get back. So when I look at who I was as a child and where I am today, how could I get back to who I was to be able to put a light into a child, to be able to see him in the future, to be able to help them grow, to be something bigger and know that the opportunity is going to be there as they grow. So that's one of the philanthropy sides. And that's why we do the single mother's brunch. What that looks like is we rent out this Italian spot, and the Italian spot, we have a speaker come speak to the moms. And on the outside, we have different stations. And in the stations, we have where the kids make their mom's bracelets, cards, flower arrangements. There's a photo booth, different things. There's different stations on the outside where the team is helping them do that while the speaker's speaking to the moms. And then when the speaker's done, the kids come back in. We have a buffet style where they serve the mom like they're the waiter or the waitress. And then they come back and they serve themselves. And then we do some giveaways at the end. But that's one, and that's one of the events that we do throughout the year, because we know it's not about what we get. It's about what we give. And that's really one of the foundations. And then as that grows, because we do so much from the inside of our organization with that, they know the organization is not just about, you know, units and dollars. It's about giving, and it's about thriving, and it's about the culture we create, where our goal is to create a family dynamic inside of our team where people show up, where this family is more than their blood sometimes. A lot of times where this family's pouring in their blood, they feel it. So kind of rough.
No, I like that, because I'm like a real community guy. I'm a real give back guy. And I believe that's what fuels success a lot of times. When you give something extra, you get something extra back. You don't give to get. In all your sincerity, you give with a debt of gratitude because you understand where you are. And so in that giving, is there something in your team members that you're looking for? In that when you bring someone onto the team, because I'm a firm believer that one person can totally wreck your culture.
Yeah, I've had people like that before too. And, you know, my DOO, she's on me a lot. Like, I could say the sky is blue. She could say the sky is gray. And like, we see the world different. Yes, she sees a lot that I don't see, which is good, because I'm usually driving home and I'm like, damn, she was right. And we've had people on our team where I was like, nah, they're good. And then she's like, Scott, you got to be careful with that person. They're a cancer. And I'm like, Jesus kept Judas around. And I started saying certain, like, trying to defend the situation. And then I ends up, you know, is it becoming a cancer where I knew I should have let that person go. So now when I see the signs of the negativity or them talking, you know, you could feel it. It's just a conversation of like, hey, this might not be the best fit for you. We should talk to you about other opportunities. We never fire nobody. We just talk to them about other opportunities that might be a better fit for them. And then on the onboarding, we know we're talking about all this stuff that we do. If it doesn't excite them, or if they're not like, oh, that sounds like, then it's probably a little bit of a weird situation too when they join. So this probably not going to be a fit.
One of the things that's always inspired me about you as I gotten to know you more and more is a lot of the big teams across the country, inside of KW, outside of KW, they're so focused just on agent count, numbers, GCI, just those metrics. And yeah, they give back and do some cool things. But I feel like you've built your organization like backwards, in the sense of you care so deeply about your community and about your people that I feel like you believe, if I can just touch and inspire and help other people, you're going to get what you want. One of my favorite quotes from Zig Ziglar is, if I help everybody else get what they want, I'm going to get what I want in return. And I think you're like living proof of it. It's super inspiring, man.
I appreciate it. Yes. Yeah, sometimes in those rooms, you'll hear the teams that are like, oh, we're 40% profitable. We're 60% profitable. I'm like, dang. I'm like, because we give a lot, not only just with the team, but it's like, I don't want to be a turn and burn team either, where I'm, you know, bringing on different people every other year. And it's a whole new, you know, whole new team photo. And it's like, it just, for me, it's about the people. Like, right. And I feel like that in leadership, when you're in leadership, it's no longer about you all the time. It's about them. I mean, you got to make sure that your oxygen tank's on, yet at the end, it's about them, and they're entrusted in your world for a reason. And you got to be there for them, you know, not just for business. You got to be there for them as a person, as a, like, you got to know what's going on in their lives. Like, if you're not vulnerable with them, they're not going to be vulnerable with you. And vulnerability is one of the biggest signs of leadership, I feel. So that's whether or not.
Home Team Inspection Service is changing the way agents and clients experience home inspections. Their team-based model, streamlined scheduling, and bundled packages, including home inspection warranties, make the process smoother from contract to closing. And with Pay at Close available in many locations, you can give your buyers more peace of mind with less upfront cost. Choose the team that works with yours. Visit hometeam.com to learn more.
Scott, as you've been through this journey, you know, from the promotions you did to starting the team to building it over time, how do you think that you've grown and developed as a leader? Like, what's different about your leadership today than maybe when you started?
At today's level, I'm a lot more involved. I'm less judgmental. When I started, I don't say I was judgmental, but I didn't come for curiosity as much. Like, I would hear something and be like, I don't know about that, man. But now I'm like, now I ask more questions to get to understand. But I'm also careful because you don't want people to take advantage of you as well. So it's a little bit of you got to be careful on that, because once people know you give and you do certain things, they can take advantage of the situation. So it's knowing when somebody is like a stray cat and when somebody is actually being real. Mm-hmm. And you don't also want to be a hindrance, or you give grace when grace is not needed. So it's understanding the in-between of that, because you might be giving grace, but you're being a hindrance to that person where you should have let that person go. You know, it's like, okay, you didn't show up for the last 3 weeks. We didn't see you at 4-on-1s. We didn't see you at coaching. And the more I let them off, the more, you know, they get it behind on the bills and XYZ, compared to if it's like, hey, you need to be here. Otherwise, you're on a 30-day probation. And then if they're not hitting that, then it's like, okay, it's time to go separate ways. It's understanding the difference between that, so that I've learned more now.
And so, like you said, you have 10 people that have been with you for 10 years. How many people have been with you for 10 years?
12 of them that's been with me. So my director of operations, she was my first hire. She was 18 when she started. Now she's 20, so almost 28. So she's 27 right now. So she was my first hire. My first buyer agent, Jevic, he's still on the team, but he living in Guam. And then Janet. So yeah, there's 12 people on the team that have been with me for 5 years or longer.
And that says a lot about your leadership and about the culture that you're building. And in fact, I want to make sure we point out that I know you've probably won many other awards as well, but you won a Michelle Stewart Eagle Award. What was that about? Tell us what that was about.
So that was after Hurricane Harvey. I had got a bus. So I know that Mega Camp, they had did a whole thing with KW, and before that, I had got a charter bus and took a lot of agents out from our Market Center, then from the city out to Houston. And we did some work out there with some houses, knocked some drywall down, fixed it up right. And then I had paved for Bold for, I think it was about 10 people that year. It was a good amount of people that I was paying for that year when it came to Bold. So there was a lot of giving that was done that year, where my office, the Heritage office, they awarded me that Michelle Stewart Year Gold Award.
And you maintain that culture of giving. Obviously, we talked about all the things that you do to maintain that. But ultimately, what is the culture? Obviously, cause back to people staying with you that long. People don't just stay with somebody for no reason that long. You talked about all the things you are involved in. Mm-hmm. What does it actually mean to you to have culture in an office? We throw that word around a lot, but what does it mean to you that you're actually delivering for their lives, that they're staying with you that long?
It brings fulfillment. So I feel there's a difference between fulfillment and significance. So significance, you know, Robin Williams was significant. Like, he walked into a room, people loved him. You know, he was that guy. Yeah, he didn't feel something inside. And fulfillment, I feel you can walk in a room and when you feel fulfilled about what you're doing on a day-to-day basis, that's when you know that your journey is going the right direction. So for me, it brings a sense of fulfillment, yet it's continuing to push that charge. It's also being forward thinking about what's going to happen in the future. You don't want to be the last one to the dance either when other things continue to shift. So for me, it's like, okay, how do we look at what 2030 looks like? How do we look at what 2035 looks like? And then how do we continue to help the people now? So you got to focus on the sink. Yeah, you also got to focus on the well. And you got to know what's at the well to be able to help your people that are focused on the sink.
That's a good analogy. Now, we often talk to people about the successes and about the, you know, all the cool things that they're doing now. But if you can go backwards, Scott, what's one thing you would have done different?
I would have hired a coach sooner, my MAPS coach. So I got with Jordan Free like year six. And I know we talked about giving a lot. And the first thing he did was like, let me see your P&Ls. And I was like, all right. So I sent him over and he was like, you giving a lot. And I was like, I'll get it back. I was like, cause I was always in there like, you know, I'm not scared to go broke. Like,
right.
He's like, Scott, the best way to help the poor is not to become poor.
Nah.
Keep giving.
Imrick says that all the time.
So he's like, you keep giving like this, you're going to end up in a situation if the market shifts. And I'm like, oh, okay. So then we kind of had to, you know, dial back a little bit for a season and understand how we had to get myself to a certain profitability to grow it.
Well, I think that's a big area that so many of us miss. Like coaching and training, like in every area, whether it's a physical trainer, whether it's a professional coach, whether it's a wealth coach, like there's people that have already lived the life that we want to live that can guide us through this journey. But so many people are hesitant. I hear a lot of agents talk about, it's an expense for coaching and not truly looking at it as an investment on being able to grow and expand and get that knowledge.
Yeah, when I look at my P&Ls now, actually coaching is our biggest investment. And because we have group coaching, we have one-on-one coaching where I have my coach, my DOO as her coach. And a lot of it's needed just because, you know, from the money standpoint, for the P&L standpoint, as a club promoter, I'm getting cash at the end of the night. I'm not, it wasn't in a business standpoint where I'm like used to being able to make this money. And then once I got to a certain amount of money, I didn't even know what to do. So it's like, okay, well, I'm just going to give here and give there. And, oh, you want to do this? Let's do that. And, oh, let's travel here. I was not smart with my provisions to where I was providing correctly for myself. And I had to make the shift. And I feel Jordan helped me do that. I know Jordan helped me do that to where now I'm like, okay, I'm careful on my dollars that I put out.
How do you think about it now? How do you think about money now as it comes into you? How do you think about that in light of being able to give and also build and sustain? Like, what's your mindset on that now? And what do you tactically do when a dollar comes in the door into Scott's hands?
Money's a tool. And I look at ROI to RLE, return on investment to return on energy. So where's my best dollar going to be spent? For me, it's in people. So if I invest in people, that's going to be my biggest return. So, you know, I do the thing called 50 First Dates. And I talked about this before on a podcast where, you know, taking somebody on a VIP dinner, a lunch and a coffee date once a week for 50 weeks, 50 different people. By the end of the year, that's 150 different face to face. And on the dinner is the most important because that VIP dinner, you know, when you're talking and you're working with those people that you're going to dinner with, it's usually about a $600 dinner. And then if you do something for their birthday, for Christmas, things like that, you're spending about $1,100 throughout the year on that investment in that person. Yeah, you should get at least two referrals from that person throughout the year. So with two referrals throughout the year from that $1,100 investment at an average sales price of $300,000 on the referral, you get a 15x return on your dollar compared to other investments, you know, usually around 2 to 4% on a return on your dollar. So I just am a strong believer when you invest in people, that's going to be your biggest return. Same with like on the team. Like if I'm investing in somebody on the, in the organization, that's going to be my best investment, is growing that person long term. Because if they're going to be with me 5, 10, 15 years, that money is going to continue to grow. So if I see something in that person and I'm like, you know what, let's put you in this class, or I'm going to give you this book, or, you know, I want you to meet with this person and I'm going to take care of the lunch, or certain things, like I know that investment over time is going to have a bigger return than if I was just to put the money in, you know, something else that I know the return is not going to be as high. So I look at it as a tool. Yet money is like, it's like a river. You got to keep it flowing. It's called cash flow for a reason. Because otherwise, you know, when a river, when water stays for a while, you're stagnant and the water's no good. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with your money. If your money stays for a while, you're not getting the return on it like you should. So it's no good. So I look at a money like river.
I think when you were talking about money a minute ago and about spending a lot of it and kind of enjoying it, but I think there's a, I was just talking to one of my agents about this the other day. I grew up broke my entire life. When I first started making money, I was more comfortable being broke and spending all my money than I was actually saving money and more money in the bank. And so I think there's a lot of, for a lot of agents, is that there's this mental shift that almost has to happen where it's okay not to be, my comfort zone is not figuring out how to rob Peter to pay Paul. My comfort zone is not having 6 months of reserves in the bank. How do you think agents make that, I'd say people, how do you think people make that mental shift to be able to be comfortable not being the way that it's always been, that then creates a whole different level of opportunity and growth for them?
Yeah, it's experiences. I feel when you put people in experiences and they see experiences and they're like, I can achieve this by having this type of cash or having this type of, you know, money saved, then their goals are different. Then their mind has expanded. There's a story about, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And there is this kid, he grew up, you know, it was broke growing up. And his family, you know, he graduated middle school and his parents were like, hey, we're going to go out. We're going to celebrate tonight. He's like, okay, we're going to celebrate it. So we're going to go out for a steak dinner. They're like, steak dinner? He's like, okay, let's do that. So he said, where are we going? He said, we're going to this place called Chili's. So they went to Chili's, you know, they enjoyed it. They're like, man, that steak at Chili's, that's the truth. So he went through high school, you know, high school ended. His parents were like, hey, we're going to go out and celebrate tonight. You know, congratulations on graduating high school. We're going to go out for steak dinner. He's like, oh, we're going to Chili's. And he was like, no, we're not going to Chili's tonight. We're going to Outback. They're like, Outback? I've never been to Outback. So he goes to Outback. He's like, man, this tastes a lot better than Chili's. So then as time grows and he finishes college, he calls his parents and say, hey, I'm going to take y'all out. You know, I appreciate everything y'all did growing up. I'm going to take y'all to celebrate. We're going to go out for steak. They're like, okay, what time do we meet at Outback? He said, no, I want y'all to meet at Ruth Chris. And they went to Ruth Chris and like, dang, this steak is beyond anything that I've ever experienced. So people don't know what they don't know unless they experience certain things and they're put in a different environment to be able to see what's really out there.
So there's real estate, Scott. What else is in Scott's world?
So I have the title, I have media. I was telling Daniel a little bit, my next focus is China, which might sound kind of crazy.
You're going to buy China?
I mean, no. I'm going to China on the 18th, which I'm going down a journey. So I was at this wedding. So this girl on my team met this guy. I took him to Mexico 3 years ago. I just took him again. But I took him to Mexico 3 years ago, and she met this guy at this pool party. He lived in Spain, and he flew her out a couple of times. He came out here a couple of times. And then she went out there for the summer. She comes back and she says, hey, Scott, I'm moving to Italy and I'm getting married. And I'm like, because she was on the team for 6-7 years. I'm like, dang. I'm like, all right, well, that's cool. I am 100% happy for her. So I'm like, okay. So she's like, I want you to come to the wedding. You know, I'm inviting a couple of people from the team. It's going to be in Italy. I would love for you to be there. So, okay, I'll be there. So I get to the wedding, $1 million wedding. This guy's well off. And there's 28 countries being represented at this wedding. And the father-in-law gets up. He's like an old school Italian mob type dude. He gets up and he's like, welcome to my dinner, all you poor people. And I'm like, oh, he got my attention. All the poor people. So he does his whole speech. I meet a guy named Peter at the wedding. Peter is his business partner. And Peter and this guy went in business back in 1978. So a couple of days later, I'm in Rome and the father-in-law comes up to me and he's like, you met my business partner, Peter. He's like, he's very fond of you. He's like, we went in business together in 1978. And he said, we both went into China And he's like, we went deep in the jungle where nobody would go. And we went back to Europe. I picked three countries in Europe. He picked three countries in Europe. And by 1993, we were the biggest furniture distributors in all of Europe and haven't since then. I'm like, Pam, they're just a middleman. They're killing like that. So then I get back from China. My head's spinning like, man, these guys are making millions just doing this. So I'm looking up China, seeing things. So I call my cousin Joe, and he's been drop shipping like vases and fine china, things like that. And I said, Joe, I said, how you doing on that drop ship? He said, last year I made $450,000. I'm like, damn. So then I called my cousin named Peter too in Chicago. He's been drop shipping hookahs. And I said, hey, how that hookah business going? He said, man, last year I made $180,000. This year I made $350,000. So I go down a long rabbit hole of China, what's going on out there. While doing that, I'm looking at what the future of real estate looks like. So I'm looking at, okay, the 3D homes, these modular homes. There's a company in the U.S. in Vegas called Boxable that Elon Musk invested in. And then there's the Icon that's in Austin right now that are doing these 3D homes. So I'm like, I'm diving in deep to that. While I'm doing it, I'm like, I wonder what they're doing in China. So they've been doing these modular homes in China for the last 20 years. So then I'm like, okay. So then I start reaching out to those factories. I got meetings at those factories while I'm also meeting with the factories that are here in the U.S. So these homes are built. They're better builds than what's being built today. They're earthquake proof. They're wind proof. They're built faster. So these homes are built within, the 3D homes are built within a week. The modular homes are built within 45 days. They're less expensive. So it's from a cost, you know, looking at the cost of what it costs to build stick and brick compared to what they're building with these modular homes, the 3D, it costs less. So it costs less. The time is less. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to China to see that. And I got the companies here. So I'm just like, what do I got to do to be able to be in this for the future of real estate? Because right now it's less than 3% of homes are being built like this. Mm-hmm. 2035 is expected for 80% of homes to be built like this. Mm-hmm. So it's like, how do you get involved with Tesla before Tesla was Tesla?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's where I'm at right now.
Now, be careful now. I just want to make sure you be careful. Make sure this is going to air after he goes to China. We want to make sure you can come home.
Yeah, right.
You're going to see my Instagram and be like, man, China was not the move.
You know, yeah. And you know, Scott, it's funny you mentioned a company in Austin, because I saw a documentary on them, the Icon, and they're building a couple communities over there. I thought that was real interesting. You know, just things come full circle sometimes. You just look at it and you're already in real estate. And Lord knows y'all got a lot of land in Texas.
Yeah, I mean, that's what made the most sense, because I was looking, I was like, okay, I'm looking at cell phone chargers, all types of things in China. I'm like, what am I going to do selling for cell phone chargers when I'm already in real estate? I understand real estate. I'm like, if I'm going to go out to China, I need to go and see what they're doing when it comes to real estate. Now, it might not make sense with the tariffs and everything. At least I walk it. I understand it. I can see from a, you know, the tech standpoint what they're doing. And then when I come back, I walk the factories here in the U.S., I can compare it and see, okay, what's the difference? Like, mm-hmm. What are they doing there that they're not doing here? Or what are we doing here that they're not doing there that we're going to win here? And then partnering with the U.S. companies, because it just might make more sense after you look at tariffs and shipping and making sure everything is up to U.S. code. It probably would make more sense to go with the biggest company. And I just want to see what they're doing out there in China to understand it now. So now I'm going just more from an education standpoint.
Bo asked you something earlier about how you see money now. And I want to make sure before we, you know, end this podcast and let you go, that you talk about what he asked you then. How do you see wealth? We talked a little bit about that before we got on the podcast, because, of course, this podcast is to help people of color earn more, learn more, and build wealth. So in all of those things that you're doing and all those new moves and those exciting adventures you're taking, how does this all shape into wealth building for you? How do you see wealth?
So you have your mental wealth, you have your physical health, you have your spiritual wealth, you have your, you know, social wealth, and then you have your financial wealth. And each bucket, there's different coaches or different people that are going to be in your world that are going to help you grow. So it goes back to that coach side. Like, if I'm looking at my physical health, you know, it's probably not going to be the guy that's 350 pounds, you know, 5'9", that's going to help me get there. Yet, if I'm looking at my business wealth, it could be somebody that might be, you know, 350 pounds, 5'9", because they might have done certain things in business that have helped them get to a certain place. But it's, everybody's in a different season. And it's, and for me, it's, if I'm taking advice from somebody, I got to make sure I want to sit in the chair that they're sitting in. And that's kind of where I'm at. And that work is like, okay, if this guy is a billionaire, how did they get there? Like, what route did they take to get there? Did they knock people off to be able to get to that level? Or did they help people grow? Like, if I look at the organization, is there a good amount of people that have been with them for 20, 30 years? Or the people that they started with can't stand the guy? Like, that, if it's that situation, is like, yeah, that might be the one to take advice from on how to build the business to be able to get where you're growing. Or, you know, if the physical health, or like, say it's your spiritual side, a lot of times, and spiritual, especially in church, when you get behind the kitchen, you know, you might see some things that you're like, hey, like, this is not what they talk about on on the pulpit. So it's like, you know, when I'm looking at things like that too, I want to make sure the person that their audio is going to match their video. So what they say is what they do. And it's not just talk, and it's not really who they are. So that's really important to me when you're growing that. Yet each part of those bring you peace. You know, you have a peace index. And I feel you, when you get to each one of those levers, there's a percentage you want to look at it. And you're like, okay, my is my provisions right? If they're not right, then your peace index might not be right. Yet it might be your, you know, your physical part. You know, right now I might not feel right because my physical part might not right. So when you're looking at your peace index as a circle, what is it that's going to bring you true peace? And it, I feel like each one of those is what's going to bring you wealth.
Now, Scott, as we wrap up, what's one thing that you would tell the future generation of entrepreneurs, agents? I think just entrepreneur in general, because I think you're more than just a real estate agent. I mean, you have your hand in, you're going to China next in a couple of weeks to go think about the future of real estate, right? What do you think that is one piece of advice for future entrepreneurs that they can take to the bank?
Continue to think big. Don't let limited beliefs, don't let people talk down on you. You know, I had an uncle when I got into real estate. He was very cautious about me being in real estate. He was like, hey, that's not for you. Like, you know, and if I would have listened to him, or if I would have listened to certain people, then I would let those things probably eat into me, where I wouldn't have been where I am today. So just be careful on how you let words affect you. You know, there's no such thing as bad days or just bad moments. And it's how you let a moments affect you on how your day is going to go. So, you know, just, you know, when situations happen, if it doesn't matter in 5 years, it shouldn't matter in 5 minutes. So just, you know, stay focused on where you're growing, who you're becoming. You know, for myself, I know where I've been. I know where I'm going, and I know where I never want to be again. And I'm going to continue to grow. So when, for other people, just know where you see yourself as a future. And if people talk down on it, you might need to let them go for a season and then continue to focus on you.
Scott, this was a great episode. You are a wealth of knowledge. No pun intended, but you are a wealth of knowledge, and an honor. It's a privilege to have you on the show today. Thank you for being here.
I appreciate the opportunity.
Follow the Color of Money podcast today and get notified when new episodes are released weekly.
Be part of this transformative listening experience.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not Keller Williams Realty LLC and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.